listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
Welcome to Full Power Living, the only show on international media dedicated to the exploration and understanding of emotions and their role in human life. I'm Eileen Dillon, your creator and host. To most people, emotions are a mystery. They seem to be something that just happens. They easily get out of control. They can ruin our lives. And they can be embarrassing or even downright dangerous. They're not acceptable at work. A lot of people believe that if they can just understand why they're angry or depressed or fearful, then they can change things and improve their lives. Few of us actually connect emotions and health. In our modern world, we tend to separate our body from our emotions or spirit, treating physical symptoms at times of ill health, but not connecting emotions, particularly very early childhood emotions and ill health. Well, today's guest does connect emotions and health in her work, believing that when early emotional blockages are resolved, health will inevitably improve. Kim Knight is with us today to tell us how emotions and health intersect and how to work with emotions to improve your physical health. During this broadcast, remember, we have two chats rolling, one on emotionalpro.com's radio page and the other on blogtalkradio.com/FPL for Full Power Living. Also, you can call us toll-free, 800-630-7858, and talk with Kim directly, 800-630-7858. Well, who is Kim Knight? She founded and runs the Art of Health program and clinics based in Auckland, New Zealand, and will be talking to us from New Zealand today. She's a health coach who specializes in helping people without using medicines or supplements with the chronic conditions usually seen as minimally curable, such as insomnia and burnout and chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia and irritable bowel syndrome, allergies and emotional trauma and abuse. When Kim herself developed some of these problems over 20 years ago, she went to specialists and ended up getting worse, and it finally caused her to leave work abruptly. For 5 years, she tried over 140 different natural health modalities and even started training in several of those modalities as part of her self-healing. Unknowingly, this was the start of her professional health training. You can find her on the web at artofhealth.co.nz, artofhealth.co.nz. Kim Knight, a very hearty welcome to Full Power Living.
Hi, Eileen.
Hi. So one of the things I find fascinating is that you talk about the body as a computer and ill health occurring somewhat like having your computer get infected by a virus, sometimes frequently when you don't even know it got infected. Could you tell us a little bit about that way of understanding?
Actually, I think the way I use that analogy is that I say that we have a body intelligence system which we're all born with, which it's like this inbuilt software program which is there to make sure that we stay healthy and also that we're happy and also that we're safe. And when I say safe, I mean emotionally and physically safe, because those are prerequisites for a human being. So we need to feel safe. We want to feel happy, and that is our natural state. And we want to be healthy, and that is also our natural state. So we have this inbuilt software, which we could call our body intelligence, which everybody is born with. We all come pre-programmed with this software, and it's watching all the time to make sure that we stay happy, healthy, and safe. And it senses everything that's going on in our environment from the moment we're born, and actually it already starts working when we're in the womb. And it senses, it puts out feelers to see if there are any dangers, if you like, or if there's anything that's not right. And then it has to communicate that information back to us but it doesn't speak English or any other language for that matter. It doesn't speak words. So it communicates in its own way, which are initially a very subtle way, which would be body sensations. So not pain, but sensations. So an example of a body sensation, very simply, would be feeling hungry or needing to go to the toilet. We all know what that feels like, and we know that that's a body communication, and that is our body intelligence telling us this is what you need to do in order to keep me happy, healthy, and safe. So if we're hungry, you know, it wants food so that we stay alive. And when we listen and take notice of that body sensation, then the sensation goes away. But if we don't listen or notice to that sensation, because there are many other sensations also, such as gut feelings, a gut feeling would be a sensation, you know, that this doesn't feel right, then it will send us emotions. So emotions are a form of communication, and I'm talking more the negative emotions here, like fear or worry or anger or sadness. Then it will send us emotions to tell us this is how I feel about what's going on in the environment right now, and you need to do something about it. And if we don't do anything about it, if we avoid or ignore either consciously or unconsciously the feelings, then it starts to send us symptoms. So this is what I call the software, if you like. It's the body intelligence system, which is, it's got nothing to do with the mind. It's just this programming that we come with, but most of us are not given a manual. We don't know, you know, and partly that's just because we've become so out of touch with ourselves because of modern society.
Mm-hmm. Where we're actually taught to override our emotions or repress them or try to ignore them, so that that's the area in which I work, so that by the time we get to be, I don't know, 18 to 20 years old, we no longer know exactly what we feel and are often afraid to listen to ourselves, in fact.
Absolutely. And there will be very good reasons for that, but absolutely, that's exactly what happens. And, of course, we don't know that we've done that.
Mm-hmm. So when in the material that you have, say, on your website, you say that if I understand this correctly, so correct me if I'm not right, the computer virus, as we've been talking about it, is essentially unidentified and unexpressed emotions, usually from the past, limiting beliefs that have been unconsciously created after traumatic events, or disempowering and life-depleting behaviors that result from those limiting beliefs. Is that accurate, that that's what comprises or creates the virus?
I'm not sure. The only thing I think I say about the virus is that I'm trying to think what I do say. It's a bit early in the morning here, 6 o'clock in the morning. My brain hasn't kicked in. I can't remember the original analogy that I used for the virus, but yeah, I mean, basically, we have emotional needs, as you know, as a human being, and these needs need to be met by the age of 7. And actually, we have certain developmental needs which need to be met by the age of 18 months. And these are things like feeling loved and cherished, feeling validated, feeling respected, feeling heard. You know, these are actual needs. They're not whims or fancies. They need to be met, which is why the Human Givens Institute has called them human needs. And if those needs are not met, because they are a need, we will spend the rest of our life trying to have those needs met. But, of course, most people don't realize that they're doing that. But what happens is these unmet needs create beliefs about life which drive behaviors which then get results. So, for example, if somebody's father walks out when they're 6 years old and that's a devastating event for them, they will have certain emotions around it, because remember, the body sends emotions automatically. They don't go through the head. They're sent automatically from the body intelligence as waves of truth. So the body sends emotions of, say, you know, devastation, hurt, and frustration, whatever the emotions are, and then out of that also, if that is not resolved, then the body creates a belief such as men leave me, or I'm abandoned, or you know I'm unsupported, whatever it is, it could be more than one belief. And out of that, we will then create certain behaviors such as, well, one person, for example, it might be, well, I'll make sure that I push people away before I get hurt again. So I'll never allow anybody to get close to me. Or somebody else might be, well, I'll have to make sure that I'll be needy and clingy, so that'll make sure that nobody ever leaves me. So we create different behaviors, which are what we could call disempowering behaviors, because they don't serve us and they don't serve anybody else. And, of course, then we get results. So if somebody has got the behavior of pushing people away, then they will push people away and they will end up abandoned and you know, unsupported as per their original belief. So our beliefs, our unconscious beliefs, drive our behaviors, which get results.
Well, let me ask you this one. My first husband and I conceived our daughter and did it, you know, cooperatively. But then when she was 5 months old, he decided he didn't want to be a father. And by the time she was 10 months old, he left the family. And he was in pain and I was in pain. And it wasn't until she was 13 and was not participating in her own life that I uncovered the possibility that she had made a decision somewhere in that time that that it was her job to keep us happy.
Yes.
And I'm sorry, I heard a noise. I wasn't sure you were still there. It was her job to keep us happy. And I know that the children do that. They figure out what needs to be put together so that they have a safe place to live in their childhoods. And she proceeded to sacrifice herself in order to keep us happy. And I discovered it when she was 13 and told her that what really would make me happy, you know, that was a loving thing to do, but what would really make me happy would be for her to have her own life. And it drew my attention to the fact that people seem to make those decisions. They assess what's going on around them, even at very early pre-verbal ages. And to me, it looks like those decisions work okay during childhood, but then as you get into adulthood, they start really working against you. Does this make sense
yes.
to you in terms of how
absolutely.
You work with it?
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't work a lot, obviously, with very young children, but I work with the consequences of what happens in childhood. And yeah, because the bottom line need for a human being, again, according to the Human Givens Institute, and they're called the Human Givens Institute because we have certain givens, you know, a human given these needs. So, you know, as I said, according to them, we have certain developmental needs which need to be met by the age of 18 months. And the core need underneath all these, you know, the need to feel cherished and validated and respected and all these things, the core human need underneath is the need to be loved unconditionally. That is what we really want. And it is, isn't it? That's what we want.
Mm-hmm.
We want to be loved and accepted unconditionally, which means no conditions. But how many people get that? You know,
mm-hmm.
hardly anybody. And our biggest fear is not being loved unconditionally. So, yes, if of course, when we're very little, you know, our parents or adults around us are gods, and they are responsible for, essentially, for us keeping us alive, you know, for keeping us fed and sheltered and clothed and all that sort of stuff. So if anything goes wrong, we can't make them wrong. And so we have to make ourselves wrong, and then we have to do whatever it takes, you know, unconsciously to make them love us so that we won't be abandoned.
So sometimes these things take years and years and years, as you just alluded to surface, but they are essentially working inside in a negative way all of those years. Is that so? And why does it take so long to surface?
Well, I'm not an expert on childhood psychology, I have to say, but, you know, from the age of, they say that up to the age of seven, we're purely emotional beings. Like prior, you know, up to when we're in the womb, we're purely an energetic being. And then once we're born for the first 7 years of our life, we're purely an emotional being. So our rational mental faculties haven't kicked in yet, which is why, on the whole, people don't start learning how to read and write and whatever until they're about seven. And then from about seven, people, the mental faculties, the mental intelligence, it starts to develop. And between 7 and 14, there's a huge amount of focus, you know, at school on developing those faculties. And then from the age of 14 to 21, then our physical sort of side starts to kick in, which, of course, is when we start to go into puberty. So it's not surprising, really, that we don't start to think about this stuff until we maybe hit our sort of late teens or into our early 20s, because we're only really starting to develop into, you know, a fully rounded human being with
right.
all our faculties.
Uh-huh.
And that's when people start to become aware. And then, of course, at 28, there's the Saturn return, which
right.
is, how do they describe that? But it's when any unfinished business starts to sort of show up. And
yes.
for a lot of people, I do notice it, and it was the same for myself. That's when things really started to break down, when I was about 27.
Mm-hmm. For me, the Saturn return has seemed sort of like a re-evaluation, like, am I going in the direction that I should
yes.
be? If not, I need to correct here. And that happens
yes.
at other times in our lives, too, like I think around 40, but not nearly so powerful as at 28. Well, Kim, we're up to our first break, and you do something you call health detective sessions, and also you talk about emotions as energy, a different way than most people look at emotions, and I'd like to talk about those two things with you when we return.
Great.
We're talking today with Kim Knight, a cutting-edge health practitioner who specializes in working with chronic and debilitating physical syndromes like fibromyalgia. She works with people all over the world, helping them to resolve physical and emotional issues for improved health. So we'll be finding out more about Kim and her work and how you might be able to connect with her if you so desire when we return. This is Full Power Living. Stay with us.
Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
How difficult is it for you to ask directly for what you really want? To take responsibility graciously and willingly for your mistakes? Or to relate with others because it's fun instead of because you need something from them? Most people believe manipulation and codependence are normal behaviors for adults. They may be common, but they're not normal. Manipulative behaviors really are designed to be part of childhood, to be put away as things of the past when we become adults. So, if you're ready to let manipulation and codependence be part of your past, then get the mini course I've created for you, Ending Codependence, The Bottom Line. I'm Eileen Dillon, the Emotional Pro, offering you a formula that you can follow for creating healthy, manipulation-free, and lasting intimate relationships. I also give you the tools and principles that you can use to develop lasting immunity to codependence. Get Ending Codependence today at www.emotionalpro.com. That's emotionalpro.com. Welcome back to Full Power Living. I've got just a few announcements. Next week on February 23rd, we have Allison Blankenship talking about how you can work with the ongoing challenges of stress in our modern life when she talks about how to zig when life zags. And you know that we have a list of our upcoming radio guests on our radio show page at emotionalpro.com, and we hope that you don't miss a single episode of Full Power Living. Remember, you can talk with us right now, toll-free, 630-7858, which is listed on our chat. And if you miss us live or you want to share our show with your friends and family, you can download archived podcasts from the radio show page, or you can subscribe to Full Power Living on iTunes. And we want to thank you for helping us with our mission of transforming our world through the mastery and power of human emotions. Today, our guest is Kim Knight, who's founder and director of The Art of Health in New Zealand. And Kim, before we broke, I wanted to ask you about, I don't know which one you want to go with first. We have talking about the nature of emotions as energy and being a health detective. I sort of think talking about emotions as energy would come first.
Yeah, that feels good.
All right. So tell us how you perceive emotions as energy.
Well, I'm not sure. I mean, a lot of people now have heard of the concept of quantum physics, the theory of quantum physics.
Yes.
Which is that everything is energy. that means that every single thing that is manifested and in form, so, you know, a chair, a table, a tree, a human body is, despite the fact that it looks very solid, it is in fact at its very core energy. And this is quite hard for the human mind to comprehend. It's very hard for my mind to comprehend. But in fact, if one human cell is put under a microscope and magnified, I'm not quite sure if it's a million times or more than a million times, but if it's magnified to a huge extent, then what one ends up looking at is waves of energy as opposed to solid matter. So our physical, I like to think of the human body as made up of four core parts, to put it very simply, which is our physical aspect, our mental aspect, which is our thinking, our emotional aspect, which is our feelings, and our spiritual aspect. And each of those aspects are a different vibration. And, of course, our spiritual vibration would be finer vibration than the physical body. And mental and emotional layers of our being are also of a finer vibration than our physical being. So, but all together, we are an energy being or a field of energy. And in Qigong, for example, because one of the main modalities that I use is Qigong, is the description for this energy is Qi. And the interesting thing about Qi is that Qi is described scientifically as energy plus information plus mass, so a small amount of matter or mass. But it's energy and information. So most people, when they think of Qi, they think of it as energy, but they don't think of the part of it that is information. So really, we are a walking field of energy and information. And what is that information? Well, it's everything that's ever happened to us. It's all our memories, every event that's happened to us, every thought we've ever had, every feeling we've ever had, everything. That is what makes us up. So whenever we have an emotion, which is energy, because another law of physics is that energy cannot be destroyed, it can be transformed. So water can become ice or steam, but it can't just disappear. And so this energy, this emotional energy, whenever we have emotions that arise within us from within our body, if that emotional energy is unpleasant and we don't deal with it, then it stays in our body. It has to, because it can't just disappear. And the body is so incredibly intelligent that it knows how to store it until we can deal with it. And it simply just puts it in the cells. And so this emotional energy then builds up and builds up and builds up. And, of course, this is all unconscious. And because our body is just so incredibly resilient, it can actually take quite a lot until problems start to occur. But essentially, this emotional energy at a quantum level will be affecting our cells at a chemical cellular level. And eventually, this emotional energy will start to rewire our cells into a state of dis-ease. And that's what disease is. It's a state of dis-ease.
And so now the energy gets blocked. And I was going to ask you, suppose we go back to that situation I was describing with my daughter. And let's say she's a 25-year-old who comes to see you and says that she can't quite get herself to go fully into her own life or to be successful in what she does and so forth. If you're, if this is a detective session that you're doing, how would you go about discovering what got blocked?
Actually, I wouldn't be using that that particular work for that situation.
Sorry right. about that. So,
okay. So, well, I can't remember this. So the situation with you was that your partner, father.
No, the one that I'm talking about is that she essentially had her family break up at the age of 10 months, and both parents had a very difficult time coming through that. And then somewhere in there, she apparently made a decision or a determination that it was up to her to keep everybody happy.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's a really tough question to ask on the spot, because in order, whatever exercise, like I have a whole toolbox of techniques, and I use whatever is appropriate for a person. And always in the first session, the first session is an hour and a half of me gathering a huge amount of information from that person. And from that, I would then say, okay, well, let's try this exercise or that exercise. And essentially, I have a double approach. I can either work at a very cognitive, conscious level, which would be working at changing how one does things, changing behaviors. So, for example, if somebody has got a habit of pleasing people and always putting themselves last and not thinking of themselves because they don't want to be rejected and they just want to get, you know, other people's love, that they're afraid of how they will feel if they're rejected, then I will be showing them how they can put themselves first and not let themselves be walked over. So learning how to communicate effectively, how to say no, how to put things into their life that looks after them, how to take things out of their life that doesn't look after them, like working too hard and working, you know, 16 hours a day and not eating properly, you know. So behavioral changes, how they do life. But the other way of coming at it is at a deeper level, at more of an unconscious level, with what I call energy psychology techniques, which are a number of tools and exercises, which would be impossible to describe over the phone now, but tools and exercises to guide people to clear the original emotional charge without having to get emotional. And once that emotional charge is actually dissipated from the body, then the belief changes. It just changes automatically, like a deck of cards falling away. And because the belief is gone, then the behavior changes. So people just shift internally without having to really, you know, they don't have to make an effort at all, but there's like this automatic shift inside. So that's what I would do in that situation. And the
Thank
health detective sessions are for something completely different.
Okay. Well, that's a really interesting thing, because in traditional therapy, people have determined that they need to go through all the emotions. Certainly that's the way I was trained in the beginning, but my work has evolved away from that too. But I do want to ask you a psychotherapy type question, because in our world, cognitive behavioral therapy is being touted as the most provable and effective therapy for a lot of things. And my understanding is that behind cognitive behavioral therapy is the notion that what we think actually creates emotional states, and therefore by changing our thoughts, we change our emotions. And it seems backwards to me. And when I read some material from Dr. David Mickle, he's got a different understanding too. And you do Mickle therapy. So I was wondering if you would tell us which is the cart and which is the horse.
Well, this is an interesting question. And actually, I think it's both. I don't think it's just one or the other. The way that Dr. Mickle describes it, and I agree, is that the emotions are sent from the body as waves of truth, and they don't, you know, they're not, that they come before the mind kicks in. But the way I look at, and I agree with that, but the interesting thing about truth or facts is that in human beings tend to think that something has to be black or white, but actually life is a paradox. And there can be two sets of things that are both truthful, right? It's not just one thing necessarily. And what I've come to see is that, yes, emotions arise as waves of truth from within the body, and they are an automatic response to something that is going on in our environment. So, for example, if we suddenly hear a big thump, you know, and we thought somebody was breaking down our door, even before we had the thought somebody's breaking down our door, if we heard a big sort of crash, our body would respond and go in, perhaps, and go into fear, right? That's an automatic response from the body. And then the mind would kick in trying to work out, well, what is that? So that's the thought. Now, what tends to happen, though, is that people create mental patterns of thinking, such as, I don't know, I haven't got enough money, for example. And then that will create a feeling of fear and worry. So they go hand in hand, and then they become a vicious circle. So we can approach in both directions. We can approach by dealing with the emotional stuff, and then that changes how we feel and therefore how we think. And then we can also, one of the things that I also do with people is that if they've really got negative mental habits, then they have to start to become aware of that negative thinking, and they do have the power to change it because they do have the power over their mind. So I come at it also from both approaches. I mean, very heavily weighted, I suppose you could say, to the emotional stuff because I think it's so critical. But also, yeah, people need to become aware of their thoughts. And for example, one of my habits, and it's getting much better, is, you know, huge negative thinking. you know, and they say that, well, a lot of what, you know, a real worry wart. And I had a great description of worrying, which is mentally rehearsing something that you don't want to happen.
right?
And so a lot of people have this habit of having a potential negative outcome going round and round in their mind. It's like expecting the worst. And that, again, goes back to childhood of, like, protecting ourselves from, well, I don't want that to happen because I don't want to feel like how I'll feel if that'll happen. And so so we create these negative mental patterns. So, you know, over the last sort of couple of years, I've been making a real effort because it doesn't serve, it really doesn't serve, to change this negative thinking. When I notice that I'm doing it, I say, stop, cancel. Mm-hmm. And then what I do is I put the opposite thought in. So if I was thinking, oh, so-and-so doesn't like me, for example, then I'll think, oh, well, so-and-so does like me. Now, when we have that different thought, it creates a completely different chemical shift inside our body. And we are essentially a chemical factory. So really, our thoughts are very important, and gaining control over our thoughts is also important. But I think we have to do both, mental and emotional.
So the mental and emotional symptoms that we have are messengers. They're busy telling us, pay attention. That's my theory. I think you and I talked about that once. My theory is that emotions, actually each emotion brings us a different signal, like loneliness brings us the signal that we have more energy going out than coming in, or anger that we have an incorrect picture of how things are supposed to be in the world. Your work involves listening to emotions and thoughts as feedback, I guess. So symptoms as feedback. Is that so?
Yeah. So I'll give you an example. A client the other day, She came in with, and this is the connection between how sensations become turn into emotions if we don't notice the gut feelings, and then they turn eventually into symptoms because that's our body's way of getting our attention. So she had irritable bowel, was feeling very sick and nauseous, and so she came in and started, talking about what's been going on. I hadn't seen her for about, I don't know, a month or two, and she'd been doing very well. But as is the case, you know, we make progress, and then something comes up in her life, and we can, you know, it's like two steps forward, one step back, you know. Mm-hmm. So she came in, and it turned out, you know, she's got a house on the market at the moment, and her husband has been very controlling. She, you know, she's managed to attract herself to four husbands in a row who've been very controlling because of her patterning. Okay, nothing
right.
wrong with that. No, but she's changing that now. So she's been learning how to create clear boundaries around this behavior and to put herself first. Anyway, something had happened over the sale of this house that really upset her. Basically, the husband and the estate agent. I don't know what you call them over there, real estate agent, but they had made a decision without consulting her, and yet they share the house, you know, they co-own mm-hmm. this house. And she felt, of course, what emotions was her body sending that about it? Her body was feeling really angry,
mm-hmm.
really pissed off. And this ties in with the health detective, aspect of things. So every symptom that our body sends will be very telling. So she'd actually created not just the irritable bowel, but she'd actually created cystitis, a bladder infection.
Uh-huh.
And bladder infection is very much connected with feeling pissed off, right?
Uh-huh.
So she sort of semi-realized, because this is the problem, you see, we don't fully realize what's going on. And so awareness is the key to change, just becoming aware of what's really going on. So her body knew what was going on, but her mind hadn't really sort of fully, you know, understood it. Her consciousness hadn't understood it. But her body was definitely feeling very pissed off at this behavior from her husband. But she hadn't said anything. She hadn't spoken her truth. She hadn't been authentic. So we started, you know, it started becoming clear as we were talking. And then she also then connected that in. Because essentially this was abusive behavior, right? Not
right.
physically, but mentally it was abusive behavior. And then she connected it in, which was obviously a huge thing, of when she was sexually abused, when she was, I'm not sure what age, but when she was young, it was the same energy, the same vibrational energy that was being triggered. And this is a really interesting point, because this is something that I find all the time. Whatever the current situation is, it's usually a replay of something that's happened when we were much younger. So the current situation is actually a great gift, because it's saying, the body's saying, okay, now it's time to deal with this. So I'm going to give you some clues here that something needs mm-hmm. to be dealt with. And so we worked on that. We worked on that issue, which was a much deeper original issue. And then that helped to clear, you know, the current issue, and
mm-hmm.
and helped her then to be able to go away and to speak her truth with her husband and to create a clear boundary and to say, I'm not prepared to put up with this. You know, I won't be treated like this anymore. I deserve better. And, yeah, so that's, I don't know if that's useful.
Yeah, that's very good. I'm thinking as a therapist, and in my own life, when something comes up where it's something where the emotion is very strong, although over the years I've learned to pay attention to more subtle emotion, I ask myself, what could I possibly be trying to teach myself by having this situation? Or I might say, what's the earliest time I remember having this feeling? And it'll take me right back there. And I can work on it. And that's part of what I want you to talk about. We've got another break here, but I want you to talk when we come back about what, if I were to work with you and you would help me to heal myself and undo some of these blockages, would I then learn from you how to do some of these things on my own so that I could either self-heal or prevent these kinds of blockages from recurring? And that's what I'd like to talk with you about when we come back.
Sure.
All right. We're talking today with Kim Knight, who can be found at artofhealth.co.nz. And she works with people all over the world. We'll be talking with her more about emotions and health when we return. Don't forget to ask your questions now on the chat or at 800-630-7858. You're listening to Full Power Living. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
Everybody feels anger. But if you don't learn to deal with it, anger can mess up your life. It can cause you relationship problems, difficulties on the job, or create health problems. If you want a way to understand and work with anger that's simple yet so powerful it helps you to put an end to the specific angers that are messing up your life, then you'll want to get a copy of a mini course I've created for you entitled Reduce Anger Now. With it, I want you to be able to figure out what's stimulating the anger you feel and have an easy way to change that anger so you can dramatically reduce the anger in your life. I'm Eileen Dillon, the Emotional Pro, longtime psychotherapist, coach, and anger expert. I've helped thousands of people to master anger, and I want you to begin to become an anger master in your life. Order Reduce Anger Now at the store, www.emotionalpro.com. That's www.emotionalpro.com. All right, we're back on Full Power Living. Today we're talking with Kim Knight, who is a health coach and founder and director of Art of Health, which is located in New Zealand, but she does work all over the world. And Kim, I think I would like you to talk just a minute here about the kinds of things that you have so thoroughly outlined on your website that are available for people. What are some of the services? What are some of the special things you'd like to draw our attention to?
Well, obviously, one of the main things I do is I work with people with chronic illness, and in particular things like chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, irritable bowel, anxiety, depression. More and more, I'm sort of finding that I'm working with. That's what I sort of started working with because I started working with Mickle therapy, and that focuses on those particular illnesses. But more and more, I'm finding that it doesn't really matter what the illness is because that's just the end result. It all goes back to, what's going on underneath. And in every single client I've worked with so far, it's all been set up in childhood. Every single client, you know, the patterning is set up in childhood and then continued into adulthood. So I'm working with clients one-on-one doing that. Also, I mean, obviously my passion, as is yours, is emotions and emotional intelligence and also stress. Stress is a big topic because I see stress as, plays a huge role in the body creating symptoms. And stress was a huge thing for me. So, again, one of my pet topics. So everything that I'm interested in is what I've done myself, what I've learned myself. So, I don't think I could do it if I hadn't been through it myself. And I remember very clearly my first ever client when I started off as a Mickle therapist, sitting there thinking, well, I went through the training and I know all the protocol, but there's no way I could be sitting here helping somebody else recover from chronic fatigue if I hadn't gone through it myself. So that was the gift, of going through that. So there's the emotional intelligence training, stress reduction, recovery from chronic illness, but also what I started branching into last year was teleseminars, so online seminars. And of course Qigong is also a big part of my life, and the theory and the practice of Qigong is really, the more I do it, the more I see it, just it's so all-encompassing as an effective way to change and transform one's life on every level, physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually. These techniques are thousands of years old. They're very well tried and tested. They come from, you know, very firm foundations. And so I really do love Qigong. So, yes, I'm running teleseminars and telesummits, and you're going to be on one of my teleseminars in a couple of weeks, which is very exciting.
I'm looking forward to that. Yes, that's on March 2nd, right?
Yes.
I think. Yes. Right.
And I'm starting to build up products as well. You know, like, so last year we did a chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia and adrenal exhaustion telesummit. So that is now available for people to listen to, and there'll be more ebooks and things coming, CDs and whatever coming.
So people can find out about that telesummit by going to artofhealth.co.nz, and I'll also be sending out an announcement about my appearance. So look for it. So, Kim, once I work with you, I have a couple of questions swirling around in my head. One is that it seems to me then the earlier I can start listening to signals and recognize that something isn't sitting right with me and start working with it, the less need there is for me to get ill. And the other thing that's swirling around in my head is, if I were to come and work with you, could I learn how to work with these things on my own so that I could either heal or prevent further illness?
Well, absolutely. The first thing you said, yes, getting onto it as quickly as possible, then yes, absolutely. And as far as learning to do it oneself, I mean, my motto, my tagline, if you like, for my business is self-care, a revolution in healthcare. I have like a continuing rolling over of clients, because essentially everything, or most of what we do together, it's to teach them to look after themselves. So they get given tools and exercises to go away and to put into practice. And actually, the results that they get are completely, really, well, a lot up to them, how much input they put in, you know, how much they commit. So, for example, actually I don't do this a lot with clients now, but, you know, one of the things I can do when it's applicable is the Qigong technique of the inner smile meditation, which was a meditation which I did ongoingly for about 10 years every day to clear emotions out of my body. So that is something that one does for oneself. Or all the Mikkel therapy techniques, every single Mikkel therapy technique is a technique that a client is given and they take it away and they have it for life. Now, some of the other energy psychology techniques that I use, where I take people through guided visualizations, that they can be more difficult to do oneself. You know, if you were to do them, you know, a lot, and certainly as a practitioner myself, I can sort of take myself through those exercises. But even so, there's something very different and very powerful when you work with somebody else, because there's an energy that's set up between the two people, which allows for transformation to happen. So even though I can take myself through those exercises, it's still better if somebody takes me through the exercises. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the techniques, that the whole point is to give people the tools to look after their own health, for them to take responsibility for their life. But, you know, I feel that we're still always going to need support and help from somebody else. I go to people, you know, I still need support and help, because I've still got lots of stuff to work on.
But interestingly, over the holidays, my husband was in the hospital for 2 weeks with a health crisis. And during the follow-up care, one doctor with whom we work, who he cracks me up because he keeps saying, I don't know why I became a doctor, I don't believe in medicine. But he does believe in the medicine process, but he doesn't believe in giving out a lot of medicines. And one of the things he commented on was that the very thing that happens when you go into the hospital is that you are made dependent, and you then rely on the doctors around you to make decisions, do things, et cetera, et cetera. And the approach you have is opposite to that, correct? Not saying that you can't be interdependent, but you don't allow yourself to be dependent for your medical issues.
Yeah, and I think that goes for life in general. You know, we're here to... I remember a very, you know, an enlightened guru who was giving a talk here several years ago. I'll never forget his words. He said, in a talk he was given, he said, become your own master.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what I believe we're here to do. And I remember when I was 28, you know, the Saturn return, that was when I had a nervous breakdown, which actually... several years later, as I was starting to understand what had happened, it was actually a breakthrough.
Mm-hmm.
It was actually a breakthrough in consciousness to a new level of consciousness. My old beliefs, my old paradigm was just completely shattered in that moment, in that sort of period of a couple of weeks, but I didn't know that that was what was happening at the time. But I remember I voluntarily admitted myself into a psychiatric hospital on the advice of the counselor that I was seeing at the time. And one of the reasons that she advised that at the time was that I was in quite a dysfunctional relationship, and she thought it would be a good way to get me, you know, away from it. And also just because I really needed some support. I was really, you know, basically breaking down. And I went into the hospital, and it was very interesting. I remember when I was being admitted, and the registrar, you know, the person who admits you, was asking all these questions, and I was so angry. I was just like so, so angry and impatient with him. And then I sunk into this, well, I already was depressed, but I sunk into this like huge, huge depression, this abyss of depression, and was lying in bed. And of course, they wanted to give me antidepressants. And so I started taking them. And within 24 hours, I felt far worse. You know,
mm-hmm.
I felt even worse in my, you know, groggy and unclear and just horrible. And I, something inside of me just said, this isn't what I need. This isn't right for me. And I stopped taking them. So here I am in a psychiatric hospital, and I'm refusing to take the medication. So I did have a choice,
mm-hmm.
you know. And,
mm-hmm.
and I don't know how or why, but they, maybe because I just was so assertive, I don't know, but they didn't force it. They said, okay. You know,
mm-hmm.
so
well,
I just,
we do
yeah.
have a right to refuse treatment. Thank you for telling me that story. We have a caller, Melissa from Maine, and I'd like to have her have a chance to talk with you, Kim. Melissa,
sure.
Are you there?
I'm here. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. Did you want
my question? Yeah. As I'm listening, it's getting even more interesting. I'm 45 years old. I'll be 46 in April. And I've sort of struggled on and off and more on in the last 6 or 7 years with anxiety and panic. And I just wondered how I could... I've tried everything, not medication. I've bought different programs. And I do feel that some of my relationships and my life could be at the root of it.
Okay, Kim, over to you.
Okay.
I know, so, it's a big one.
No, well, yeah, obviously, I mean, you know, I'm not going to solve this problem over the phone because, as I said earlier,
yeah.
when I first meet with a client, we have an hour and a half to go
yeah.
into depth to
yeah.
get all that detail.
Mm-hmm.
But just as an interesting point, in Mikkel therapy, we actually define anxiety as a symptom as opposed to an emotion. And this is how we describe anxiety. We say that from the moment we're born, as we were talking about before, every time our body has an emotion that is not resolved, because it cannot be destroyed, it gets stored inside the body. So if you imagine that you have a big pot inside your body, and every time you've had an emotion, it goes into that pot, and slowly that pot starts to build up. And the pot starts a bit like a big sort of soup pot, if you like, a stock pot.
Uh-huh.
And the emotions
uh-huh.
start to get near the top of the pot. And then some part of us says, oh, my goodness, the pot's about to overflow. What shall I do?
Uh-huh.
It's all unconscious.
Uh-huh.
And we think, oh, well, I'll put a lid on it. That'll take care of it. Now, so what we do is we depress the emotions, which for some people will manifest as symptoms of depression, because depression is depressing emotions. But because the vector of energy is to move, it tries to get out from under the lid, like steam trying to escape from under the lid. And we call that anxiety. So in Mickle therapy, we describe anxiety as one too many emotions in the pot of emotions. So if somebody comes to me and they're in panic and they're in anxiety, then there's a whole lot of stuff that is probably sitting there under the lid that, you know, is needing some attention and needing to be dispersed. I mean, that's not giving, it's not obviously not giving
but that is, that is something you can work with, and you can work with from a distance. Is that not so, Kim?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. So someone like you, Melissa, you can go on to Kim's website and make contact with her and could get some help with it directly. And that website is listed on our chat, on either of the chats.
I was just looking. I have felt some relief lately, which has been kind of nice.
Good. Well, you deserve complete relief, doesn't she, Kim?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I have a lot of faith in what Kim is doing based on how it dovetails with what I've been doing as a therapist for 40 years, Melissa. So just be advised, it's not necessary to live with that level of anxiety, and there's so much more being developed now. If it feels right for you, this might be something you want to connect with. But in any case, you certainly have my empathy and my best wishes for dealing with it.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thank you for your call.
Sure. Yeah, thank you for taking it. Bye.
Bye-bye. So there's so many of us in the world that we put up with things. I think a lot of times women in particular, we put up with things and we tolerate them and we keep going despite. And I think one of the messages is that we basically came here to be joyful and to have a good time, and that it's possible to get back there. Is that fits with your philosophy, doesn't it, Kim?
Yeah, and I have to say, I mean, I you know, for years I didn't believe that it was possible to be, you know, to be happy. You know, I really didn't. You know, people would go, oh, yeah, joy is our natural state and we're meant to be, you know, happy and joyful. But because I was feeling so unhappy, it just didn't even seem possible. And I think when it really shifted, you know, fully, when I really got it, because it did take me years of, you know, dealing with stuff, you know, stripping stuff away slowly. You know, when you take the negative stuff away, the good stuff just shines through. It's a bit like the sun is there, that's the joy, and it's covered over by the clouds, which are the negative, you know, emotions and events. And as you strip away the clouds, then the sun automatically shines through. But it was about 2 years ago when I was on a Qigong retreat with my Qigong teacher, who is a real master. And, you know, to be a Qigong master, it means that you have mastered your life, as I was mentioning before. And I went into this state of absolute peace, you know, absolute sort of stillness and peace, which I've heard people talk about, but I've never experienced. And his, you know, the Jinen Qigong, which I study, one of the main mottos, if you like, is that our natural state is to be calm and relaxed all the time. So our mind is completely calm and our body is very relaxed, and that is our natural state. And when we're in that pure natural state, which is the state of the Tao, then pure joy arises from within. And that is what I experienced. I experienced this joy emanating from inside of me that had absolutely nothing to do with anything on the outside. You know, I didn't have to have a nice car or a nice job or nice friends or a nice partner. Nothing to do with that. It was a pure joy that is already inside of us, but for all this stuff that's in the way, it just can't come out. And I had this amazing experience of being in this state of real stillness, and also experiencing that actually I didn't have to experience emotions at all. And it was amazing, because I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe that actually my natural state was not to even experience emotions.
Well, that's true for me, too. The more I've studied and worked with emotions, the calmer they become, the less I actually experience them, though I might get little hints, and if I pay attention to the hint, they don't get any bigger. And that's
right.
a kind of a curious thing, that you think that emotions are going to run your life, and they don't really have to. And I love what you're saying, because what takes their place when you get still and the emotions aren't roiling around is the ability to have the joy bubble up in you. That's a wonderful place for us to stop today. So let me remind people that your website is artofhealth.co.nz, and they can consult with you on health issues and take advantage of this powerful approach, Kim, wherever they are in the world. And I want to say I'm sorry you were ever ill yourself, but I really am grateful to you for working so hard to heal and then bringing what you learned to the world, because I know that people are getting a great benefit. And I'm very much looking forward to being on your telesummit on March 2nd. And thank you so much for being my guest here today on Full Power Living.
Thank you, Eileen. It's been lovely.
Great. Next week, February 23rd, we're talking with Allison Blankenship about how to zig when life zags, how to deal with the stresses of today's world. We very much look forward to sharing this exploration with you then. So be sure to join us live on Thursdays at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern time, for more powerful experiences on Full Power Living. Paul Johnston of Fresh Talk Media is our producer and fantastic support person. Thank you, Paul. I'm Eileen Dillon, your host, and I'm reminding you to pay attention not to what you want to overcome, but to what you want to become.
You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
When billionaires support Adam Laxalt, they get tax cuts for big business in efforts to loosen pollution regulations. Here's what we get: education cuts, contaminated water, and leniency on big drug companies. Don't let Adam Laxalt sell out our families to the highest bidder. When billionaires support Adam Laxalt, they get tax cuts for big business in efforts to loosen pollution regulations. Here's what we get: education cuts, contaminated water, and leniency on big drug companies. Don't let Adam Laxalt sell out our families to the highest bidder.